I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program has been brought to you by Calavita. Think outside the bottle with Calavita, America's trusted family brand, makers of extra virgin olive oil and fine Italian food products. Calavita.com.
Today's program has been brought to you by Wines of Bordeaux. Visit their website at Bordeaux.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, folks, welcome. Michael Lemeco here. Food talk today. Hey, World Series is over. What a great game. I know. We don't talk about sports on this, but that was epic. And congratulations for Chicago. A lifetime. How many generations? They haven't won this thing since forever. This is the first time. It's like the first time. A major city like Chicago, as cool a city as Chicago is, and they had been jinxed. It was such a good series, too. And I don't watch any baseball. I don't watch it. There's like 190 games in the season, and it's as boring can get. It's just a stupid, and it starts in like the spring, and just. But I always watch the World Series, and that was a one for the records, man. It was just great. The Chicago dug their way back down 3-1 to 3-2 to 3-3, and then dug their way out last night. Man, it looked like they were going to lose it in that eighth inning with a 3-1 homer. Holy shit, back and forth. And this was after an epic dinner at Rouge Chamat. So I want to give a shout out to Pascaline and Linda and the team, Andy Bennett, Rouge Chamat. If you don't know, when they reopened finally. Yeah.
Beautiful space.
If you didn't know about them, you should. They were uptown on 60th, just off of 5th, which is probably why you might not have known about them. Because who the hell goes up there? Sorry, you're in Harlem, so you might own your way down.
Rotisserie Georgette, it's like right next door.
I have yet to go. I have friends of mine are great, and I think there's a French chef there who's supposed to be a badass.
Very good.
Killer roast chicken. But anyway, yeah, Rouge was like 4 years uptown, closed. The space was huge. It was the old Copacabana space. Oh. It's where they filmed Goodfellas. Or one of those movies, that long scene in the hallway when they come in the back door through the kitchen.
It was beautiful,
but too big. And now they moved to Chelsea, 18th Street, to an old carriage house, and it's great. The food's amazing. It's super healthy food. That's one of the premises. You would never know it if you ate there, but it's actually kind of like a health food restaurant that's actually a Michelin-starred restaurant with killer food, but very little fat, very little sugar. Not too much salt, but everything tastes amazing. But I don't know. I hate to say this, but the star of the show.
It's Pascaline.
Pascaline, Lepelletier. Master.
Got a good team, too.
Great team. Linda underneath her. Just badasses. So we were there last night, and we got blind tasted. And, whoa, man. It's always like. But I wanted to. So this is sort of like. Anyway, let me introduce my guest here, Jeff Harding, who's the sommelier Waverly Inn, which is Graydon Carter's epic spot tucked away. What's the name of that street?
It's the corner of Bank and Waverly.
Corner of Bank and Waverly. You know what? It's, you could tell where it is because there's always like 15 big, huge black SUVs double parked outside and around the corner. It's like a baller place. Like every time you go there, it's like ex-mayors, this fashion designer, the mayor, like these ballers. It's like baller city.
A little bit. Time to time, yeah, we get that.
Nah, that's what when you guys first opened up, you did not have a phone number.
Yeah.
You didn't have a phone number. That's how cool the Waverly Inn was. And it was packed.
Call our people.
Yeah, you're like, if you don't know how to get in, like, go fuck yourself, man. And I remember like going there and just feeling like, wow, what a little fish in this tank. It was crazy.
But it's a neighborhood place, too. We have really worked hard to keep that. And so the neighbors are really important.
And the food's always been really good, comfort, solid food. It's like people always ask me, I knew with John DeLucy when he was there, and he kind of replicated that everywhere he went with all of his menus, was just to make familiar things that people. This isn't tweezer food. It's not overly constructed and wrought. But guess what? It's bloody freaking delicious.
Very good.
Just like American bank shot shit.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's own niche. It's like people aren't doing that anymore, so it has its thing. The wine list is kind of like
yes,
that, too.
Yes, less and less people are doing it. A big Ed Patet's New York, so. And there's always a market for it, which is a good thing. Sometimes you just want to eat.
It's like going home.
Yeah, you want to eat and food that you recognize and not have to think too much.
It's also, I think our focus is like, you're there to see your friends. We're not going to entertain you with the food. The food's going to be good, the wine's going to be good, but you're there to see your friends, and we're not going to interrupt you to take your attention away from your friends.
So, for those of you that live in and around New York City, this weekend, Sunday, Monday, for the first time ever, a woman who's French, named Isabelle Legeron, but she lives in London, has for years. She's a master of wine, which is really kind of extraordinary. It's kind of like we talk about, we've had a few men. We've had Pascaline on the show. We've had Roger Daggorn on the show. We've had Fred Dex on the show. We've had Laura Maniac on the show. So there you go. There's four MSs.
She's an MW.
MW, which is just as technically rigorous, perhaps even a little bit more,
little more
but
like
no service.
Bookish.
Right. But a little more bookish, but no service aspect. Because the service aspect of
it's tough.
That's what Laura, the first time Laura didn't pass, that's what she screwed up on. Because that's really weird. They just throw you these curveballs and
they try to get you. They push you until you fail, and that's how far you go till you fail. And that's a way of doing it.
Correct. And they don't want, and there's this fine line between you being too familiar, like they kind of want, it's still that old school of. They kind of want you to be step back-ish, kind of like the apron folded over your, or the side towel folded over your arm kind of thing. But anyway, she's a master of wine, and she's a huge advocate of natural wine. She has been. She just fell into it about 10 years ago, has a great book on it called Natural Wine. She's had these events that she's moved around Europe over the last 4 or 5 years called Raw, R-A-W Wine. And this is the first one ever in New York. It's Sunday and Monday. It's not that expensive. There's going to be a ton of producers there.
Go. You get right in with those people. You get to meet the people who are passionate, growing the stuff in their garden. And, I mean, you get right in there and talk to them.
Bingo. And taste all their wines. Yeah. And there's going to be panels. Pascaline will be there with Alice Firing. Alice Firing will be there by herself one day. She's been an advocate of natural wine since, you know, the day the sun rose on the earth for the first time. A lot of great people, a lot of talent, a lot of chances to taste great wine. Isabella will be doing a speech. It's going to be great. I'll be there on Monday at 3. Doing a 1 hour panel, just me and Tony Cottori. And Tony is like one of the great American pioneers of natural wine. His dad was they grew up in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and they always had a country home near St. Helens in Sonoma, and his dad was kind of raised these two hippie kids, and he studied special ed, and his brother studied something else, but they ended up falling in love with wine, and they took over this little tiny winery in 1972, when Sonoma was like apple orchards and, you know, corn cobs and stuff, and was not really producing wine, and they've been doing bio, natural yeasts, organic since day one, no SO2, which is crazy. So I've got a million questions to ask this guy. Oh. You know, this was the same time that LaPierre came in from Beaujolais into Paris with and presented these wines that they had never seen in Paris before. Yeah. And then it began to take off in France, this idea of natural wine. This was the Gang of Four of Kermit Lynch's team from Beaujolais and others in the Loire Valley. Of course, I mean, Latour's been organic for years and DRC's been bio for years. And
Now Pontet-Canet is leading the way, and Palmer in Bordeaux, and more and more organic in Bordeaux, too.
Which is surprising, because Bordeaux, to me, was always looked like, especially that side, the Haut Médoc always looked like the lunar landscape. You would go there, and there'd be nothing growing.
So manicured and everything, but there's so many more people out there in the Côte and the outlying regions who, it's like their garden, and they're living there, and they're making those wines where they live, and it's like a garden product. Like, grandma would put her canned okra to you, and these guys are putting their little wine that they made.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we were been there twice in the last 2 years, and the Left Bank's always sort of like the gold standard with the first growth star, but I've loved what they're doing. I mean, a lot of what's going on the Right Bank now is especially,
that's
to your point,
these
fourth, fifth generation vignerons that are just, you know, they want to respect the soil. They're young kids, and they talked to their parents and said, hey, let's do it my way.
Right.
You know, well, let's get a healthy ecosystem. Let's run other crops off season. Monocrop production's never good for the soil, so let's figure out a way to do this thing.
Exactly.
And the values are crazy. I mean, I've had Patrick Capiello on the show talking about it. I mean, I laugh because, in a way, my taste is sort of esoteric and has been drifting towards lighter and lighter in the last 10 or 12 years. But every time I would go look at, like, I don't have a cellar per se, but I've got a bunch of refrigerators that are overloaded with wine and Cabernet. And I would look at them and think, Jesus Christ, half of what you're drinking is red Bordeaux. You know that.
Like,
because that's where the value is. I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
I grew up as a 60-year-old guy growing up in restaurants working in America in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, all good restaurants had was Bordeaux, Champagne, and Burgundy.
Yep.
I mean, Italy wasn't really in the mix much. California might have been a little bit, because I was at the Four Seasons years ago, and the Covey and Margatai, the owners, were big fans of bringing California vintners in. But, you know, I just grew up, and you know, remember that if you went back a while back on Instagram, I posted a picture of the wine list from Windows on the World when I was there, the regular wine list, Kevin Zraley's list for the public, and you know, first growth on the list for like 25.
It's crazy. There's
32.
There's the New York Public Library has this thing, the Menu Project, something like that, and you look at these menus even from the 70s, and you see what first growth cost. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, as a chef working in New York in the 80s, I could go to Sherry Lehman or Morel and buy cases of wine that were superb, you know, wines for $18, $20 a bottle,
which was
a bit of a splurge. But, I mean, today those same bottles would be like
$300. Yep.
So, know who's drinking them.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the Raw Wine thing, it's in Brooklyn. It's the Jefferson Stop. Google it. Raw Wine. Google it. All the information's there. It's going to be a blast. Sunday, Monday, open to the trade, open to the public. You get to meet all the winemakers. You'll see the dirt under their fingernails. You'll taste their passion, taste their wines. It's going to be a real eye-opener with great panels. And it's the Jefferson Stop and then a little bit of a short walk off of the L train. Now that we still have the L train. So anyway, talk a little bit. Today, I was at it had nothing to do with you guys. A couple of months ago, I got an invite to go to Blue Hill from another friend of mine in the wine business. And the owners might be one of these. It was the Lortone.
We were there together. Yeah, the Bernice Lortone with Chateau Quinamance.
You get an invitation to go to Blue Hill at Stone Barns for lunch and drink Sauternes. I'm like, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Can you give me a ride? And they're like, yeah, we'll get you a car.
We'll get you a ride.
Yeah, okay. I'm in. F you.
She was so awesome.
She was so awesome. And the Lortone family is kind of epically legend because the dad Lortone, I think he had 11 sons and daughters. And he just got each one of them.
Here's a Chateau.
Here's a Chateau.
You got a Chateau.
So Brian Cantinac, the other guy that's in Graves. I mean, and they're all like really
interesting. Epic, like Durfort Vivance.
Yes.
There's, what are they all?
And the point was, we were drinking Sauternes before the meal with all the courses.
With the appetizers in the little bar area with the hors d'oeuvre things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what made it work was two things. There's wonderful balance and there's this backbone of acidity that cut straight through. So, like, in the old days, or in some places maybe still today, they think of Sauternes because there is a great amount of residual sugar. I mean, am I guessing minimum Sauternes or Barsac, we're looking like upwards of 110 to like 190 grams? Is that too technical?
I don't even pay attention to the sugar stuff.
Well, they brought it down because I remember back.
Well, there's varied
for sure in house styles. But
yeah.
I remember doing like years ago. I went to one of those en premier things in Bordeaux where they, you know, you go out there and you taste these wines that aren't even drinkable yet, and you're supposed to be making judgments on them.
Yeah.
It's how they sell.
Yeah.
It's how they sell the wine through negotiations. It's how they get scored. Bordeaux is a very weird place in that way. It's kind of their own little bubble world. But the truth is, you get to taste these amazing wines, and then at night they have these gala fêtes where you're at these big tables of 10 and 12, and the producers will bring verticals of their wines because they've got all the world coming from them, China, Japan, Singapore. Everyone's there to taste during the day the wine that's baby wine that's 6 months old, and then at night you have this great food. And one of the days we went to DeKalb and did a vertical, and I was amazed at how their style had gone from being, I felt, you know, when you're drinking the stuff in the 70s and 80s, was just so syrupy, so heavy, so overwrought. So, you know, got to be close to 200 grams of residual sugar to like the modern DeKalb. It was just much leaner and much crisper.
I feel the style is sort of changing, and the more modern and the more young people are making it. Just there's a vibrancy that's there. The old stuff, it's you want to kind of sit and just be with it. And it's much more serious, but someone once told me that those sugars kind of knit together and the molecules become more complex. So rather than like honey, you have like beeswax.
Hmm.
And you get those old things and you just want to sit, and it's kind of like just being with your grandmother, but it's more fun to go on a date, you know, with the young stuff. And it's like, it's vibrant, it talks back, it has a lot more, like you said, the acidity. It's just, it's exciting. And the young stuff is pretty cool to drink with much more varied things.
So we did that day, and the point made. I mean, we had this great, of course, the kitchen up there is insane. We had, I think it was a pork course for the main.
That
and
pork was sick.
It was sick.
The slow roast one.
And the crisp was just gorgeous, and the wines were super. So it used to be, I've got long-winded, and as usual, I kind of went off course here. It used to be thought that you would serve, I mean, in the old days, the law was Sauternes goes with dessert.
Yeah.
Now that our palates have changed so much, everybody thinks, from chefs to wait staff and servers to anyone that knows food, that pairing something sweet with something sweet is probably not the best idea.
Well, I also think that nowadays a dish is more composed. You have a crunchy component and a soft and a slick and an oily. You have a salty, you have a sour, and you have these composed dishes that don't need wine. Whereas old classic dishes, and that's honestly what like Dover sole and chicken pot pie, the things we do at the Waverly, they're classic things that want wine. And so this more the more classic things, they want wine. And that's my point with that. But the younger style of Sauterne is much more food friendly to have, with a more variety of things. Like spice gets amped up by the sweet wine. You can have it as an aperitif. I use it in cocktails. It's just a lot more varied.
Correct. Used to be considered like the go-to for foie gras, like, and the go-to cheese with desserts and blue cheese. And it still is great with blue cheese, and it's great with goat cheeses. Yeah. And yeah, it still works with foie, but I'm not so crazy about the dessert pairing. But the idea was, and Lortor really opened my eyes to this, was drinking this through the meal. And, I mean, sadly, to be on the reality business side, having visited the region, Barsac and Sauterne, often, knowing the producers, the consumption has slid slowly year after year after year. And there's some things I like. Armagnac's another thing I just love that I'm a huge fan of the producers. I mean, Cognac's just LVM. It's just these big brands that, you know, it's double distilled. It doesn't have a lot of personality. It's overly hyped and advertised. And then Armagnac is kind of like these little flinty producers that are individual.
It's more interesting.
I mean, Duroz is like the hero of these guys. So much more interesting. So much more nuanced to me. And yet every time I'm going there, I'm seeing like more and more vineyards just being turned up because it's harder and harder to market.
Well, luckily in the sweet regions, they're more making some dry wines, which I think is a way to not rip up the vines. They're making Ygrec with Ikem, I guess R with Riesec, S with Sudereau, and they're ripping good wines. They're amazing. So you have that alternative. But they're also, I think there's a good push to show people that you can drink these wines with. I was just in Barsac with Chateau Labouade, and these two young guys, they opened a bag of salt and vinegar potato chips. Unbelievable. It blew my mind to taste that and just sit around with these two guys in their farm, you know, their galoshes from the morning work, and it was unbelievable.
And drinking Sauterne.
And potato chips. Lays. French Lays, Sele Vinaigre. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Gotta love it. So we're going to take a quick break. The show today is going to be a little bit shorter. We had a cancellation last night. One of the guests, it happens. Had to go out of town for an emergency. So we're going to take a quick break for the people bringing this show to you and other shows on this network. And then we're going to come back, and we're going to drink some wine and talk about it. I think we have three bottles.
Yeah, we got three.
All right, we're going to talk about wine and what's going on in Bordeaux and so on, and kind of what makes it. Because I mean, tasting notes to me is boring. Talking about wine, and that's why there's never been really a successful wine TV show. Because who the hell wants to see people like going? Yeah. It just doesn't make for entertainment unless you're a complete wine freaking geek. But the story behind it. Roll that lens back, and let's talk about Semillon, Sauvignon Blanc, the Gironde, the Fog, and Botrytis, and how this magical thing happens in this region that's completely unique to the microclimates of there. Yeah. You get Botrytis elsewhere in the world. You get dessert wines elsewhere in the world that are very late harvest for different reasons. But this region is just unique for what it is, and I'll let you run with that right after this spot. Hey folks, Mike Kalameko here. Everybody knows that great cooking really starts with great ingredients, and these days we have so many options to choose from. Well, I go back to the Cola Vida family brand for years, and there really is a Cola Vida family behind this brand. I got their story long after I started using their products. Back in the mid-80s, when I was the chef at the Ritz-Carlton here in New York City, one of the things you can do as a chef is order your own food. You do the purchasing, and we switched olive oils to Cola Vida. When I had my own restaurant down in Cape May, New Jersey, the Globe, for years, that's all we ever poured at the table. That's all I ever cooked with. And then when I started my PBS show in 1999, I thought, you know, if I'm going to look after underwriting and funders, why don't I go after products that I actually use at home, that I actually cook for my family with and in my restaurant with. I've been working with them for 15 years with the PBS series and now with Heritage Radio. The Cola Vida family goes back generations in Italy. They make their olive oil from great sourced olives, traceable source olives, just south of Rome in Molise province, Abruzzo, which is where my family hails from. Since then, their family's moved here, so there's Cola Vida's living in Rome, Cola Vida's living in America. It's a great, trusted family brand. It's the olive oil I use, and I'd recommend you try it as well. So when you think of the great wine regions of the world historically, I mean, you're going to be led back to Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, okay, maybe Piedmont, Italy, too. And as a chef growing up, boy, if you were working in great restaurants in the 70s and 80s, they were mostly all French, and we grew up drinking Bordeaux and Burgundy and Champagne with impunity. Well, fast forward to today, and I just got back from the 2015 Bordeaux Harvest. We were there for a week with a bunch of sommeliers. It was so much fun, and I'll tell you, this isn't your grandfather's Bordeaux. There's a whole new generation of young vignerons working with this great terroir that they've lived on, this soil that they know that they've grown up with, and the great varietals that we all know and love, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, Malbec. You know, this style of Bordeaux now that's younger, that's fresher, that's meant to be consumed now and not cellared, because honestly, which of us has a cellar? And who wants to buy a bottle of wine and wait 10 years? So the Bordeaux whites are amazing. You know, Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon, like, hello, two grapes that we know. The reds tell all sorts of different stories, from the left bank style that are a little more Cabernet Sauvignon driven, a little more structured, right bank a little more Merlot, a little easier, a little more upfront friendly. But if you haven't thought about drinking Bordeaux wine, give it another shot. For $15 to $35 in that price range, which is my price range, there's tremendous value in there. So if you're walking past a Bordeaux aisle, stop, grab a great bottle. These are some of the most food-friendly wines on planet Earth. Hey, bingo. One more time, I want to shill out for the Raw Wine Event. Coming up, folks, if you're around New York listening to the show and you're in Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, Manhattan, any of the boroughs, North Jersey, whatever, come on out to Brooklyn this Sunday and Monday. Isabelle Legeron, she is a wonderful, she'll be doing her own panel. I'm sure it's going to be standard only. This is her event. She's done a bunch of them in Europe. This is the first one in New York ever. And you're going to get a chance to meet some really, really passionate vignerons. And you're going to be able to dive in the deep end of the pool of natural wines. And kind of how she defines it is kind of, she gives them a break. It's less than, well, I don't want to go into a Kudla website. I don't want to go into the whole thing about how she defines natural wines, because it gets really sticky about the SO2 warriors and the warriors. And All right. So, first wine you've poured. Talk to me about this.
Okay, so this is a second label of Chateau Soudureau. It's called Castelnau de Soudureau. In the southwest, Castelnau is an old, I guess, Occitan word for castle, like chateau. Mm-hmm. So this is their second label. So it's got a little less botrytis. One of the things to think about is the big houses have more labor, so they're going to go through the vineyard more times. Like, Ecam will go through, like, 10 times.
Right, talk about this, because, so the botrytis is this rot. We promised we were going to do this.
Yes, okay.
So it's this rot that occurs because
it's the furthest part south of Bordeaux, right. It's close to the river, and it's got this pine forest that keeps the fog. So the fog comes off the river in the morning, it actually goes a little bit north, too, into Saint-Croix-du-Mont and Cadillac, and then it goes into Barsac, Serrance, and Sauterne. So you get this fog that gets the mold going, and then it's moldy. It starts to mold, and the sun burns it off and starts to dry the grapes, and that happens every day.
Every day towards the end of the season, right, for a month and a half. And by the time you're getting close to harvest, when you look at these grape clusters, if I can say this, they look disgusting.
Disgusting.
Like,
I know, rotten, fuzzy raisins.
Dead mice. They look like dead mice hanging off of a vine. They're gray and they're fuzzy, and sometimes you can't even see the grapes. They're obscured by the amount of this mold because they've poked little holes in the grapes.
Yep.
There's this kind of symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
And what so what's happening is the grapes are sort of drying out,
the water's
being
going out,
wicked out, sugars are concentrated,
increasing.
And you've got these flavors that are actually being imparted from the botrytis.
It changes
mold.
The sugar, it changes the acidity, so you have levels of complexity that are beyond just what you have in wine.
And I have no idea what the history is, like when they figured out that this wasn't a complete disaster. Let's rip up these vines and plant corn.
The legend is, like, I want to say the 1200s, and somewhere in Tokaj that the Hungarians were invading, and he had to delay harvest, and he came back and found these raisins, and might as well press what we got. And
that's the story?
That's the story.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
But to your point, so now we're talking about a region that's entirely hand harvest. But normally hand harvest is like, if you have the money, you could probably do two packs. Passes on like a regular vineyard to get the clusters that are perfect and then wait maybe three or four more days or a week for the ones that aren't quite right. But with the nature of Sauternes and Barsac, it's not uncommon in some vintages for everybody down there to do 6, 7, 8, 9,
up to 10,
10 freaking passes to get them at optimum ripeness.
Yeah.
So then the wines are gathered, brought in. It's a really delicate crush.
Yeah, and you let them sit, so you've got this really sticky, syrupy juice, a lot of sugar, a lot more sugar than in regular juice, and so the fermentation happens, and then it just, when the alcohol gets to that certain point, around 13-14%, that kills the yeast, and you still got all that sugar. So now you've got wine with a high alcohol, high complexity, and unbelievable flavor, as I think you can see.
Crazy flavor. So a year ago, 2015, we were there for the harvest, and we were with a Sauternes producer, and we were there in the fields when he was picking. And I said, you know, I do this everywhere. I do this at Albarino. I've done this in Beaujolais. I've done this. Every time I do a wine show when I can be there in a crush, I ask, can I taste the juice?
It's out so of the good crush. To taste out
I
of the
want
crush.
To taste, like, I want to taste the grape juice first, and then can I taste it out of the fermentation tank? Can I taste it on its lees?
Yeah.
And then let's, at the end, we can do a vertical. I want to taste it all the way. And so we were there, and we actually put a glass underneath. It was those
crushing things. Thing. That's awesome.
And so this cloudy liquid comes out, because obviously this is just the fresh grape juice. But it was there already. It was like sweet grape juice, really sweet. Yeah. Then he had a fermentation tank going that was like maybe 8 or 9 days in. So it was still bubbling, and we tasted that fermentation tank.
That's cool.
And already, like, you could get get this kind of candy ginger and layers and honey
orange
notes.
Peel, flowers.
Flowers. Like, it was just remarkable.
Yeah.
And then we went back in his cob and tasted stuff, and I'm like, that's
cool.
Just such a treat.
Yeah. And there's you get the acid, there's a tannic structure. This, to me, this Casino is a little more classic. It's got it's young. What is this, 2010? To me, this is like apple pie, but there's a brightness of, like, if you use the right apples, you get that acidity in there. And there's a level of, like, funkiness that gives the complexity. So you could have this with, like, fried chicken. You could have, I like this with bacon. Bacon and Sauternes.
Right.
I mean, I know the bacon craze, but it's
no, but true.
It's
and we
awesome.
Had this pork. The idea of doing, like, those braised
That's
pork
that
bellies,
slow cooked pork,
because you've got
perfect.
All that fat in the pork, and a lot of times there's, like, going to be a sweet element and a salt element, and it just cuts through all of that. It works with all that, and also serving temperature. We should talk about that too.
This is pretty much perfect. I think it was we brought it out a little bit warmer, but we had it nice for a few minutes. Actually, when I taste, I don't mind tasting wine that's been in someone's bag carrying around for samples all day, because you taste flaws. When it's cold, cold and bubbles hides flaws.
Right.
And if you taste a wine that's not the perfect temperature, you can taste a flaw. So, but this is actually perfect. This is probably a little bit warmer than if it was in your refrigerator.
Yeah, the refrigerator's too cold. So if you
take,
my rule of thumb is, I always complain, like, in New York, if you have a great restaurant that you can build in your dreams, you have refrigeration for your, I guess we're going to pour it in the water.
Okay.
Sad. In New York, in restaurants, if you're perfect, you can have a wine program where all of your wines are kept to correct temperature. The white wines would be around 48 to 52. The red wine somewhere in the low 60s, mid-60s. But 90% of the restaurants, the red wines are on the floor. And the white wines are in a walk-in box.
You're in the city. You don't have much space. So, yeah, you...
So that means your red wines are always too hot. So it's almost invariable for me to go to a restaurant. It could be a really good restaurant. It just doesn't have enough refrigeration where I get the red wine. They pour it.
But
I taste it. I say it's
don't
great.
Be afraid. Ask your sommelier, hey, can you stick this in ice for 5 minutes? Don't be afraid to do that.
That's my next line. I will just ask them, do me a favor. I know it's a red wine. This is going to sound weird. Give me 10 minutes on ice and then bring it to the table to be perfect.
Or
and conversely, the white wines,
hand.
To your point, is when I'm drinking white wines at home and I'm keeping them in a refrigerator because my wine cave is too full, I bring them out a half an hour before
it's
I drink
It's too
them.
Cold in your refrigerator, yeah,
right.
For sure.
Too cold. 38 to 40 degrees is too cold. What's your next one?
Okay, the next one. This is the one we tasted with Berenice up at Blue Hill. So this is the second label again of Chateau de Clémence, which is in Barsac. Barsac and Sauternes make up the appellation of Sauternes, and that's kind of like the brand that is the most expensive. And we're tasting affordable wines, the second wines that are a little more affordable for everyday wine. And the half bottle price, this is going to be like, you know, $20. You can keep it in your refrigerator for a week or two and it's going to stay good. This is also, there's cypress trees around Chateau Clémence. And so it's a play on words. Cyprès also means so close to Chateau Clémence. So it's just off. It's nearby, but it's not the exact one. So the second label, they're going to have less trees, which is the pass through the vineyard. And you're going to have more regular grapes in there, so you get, it's a little less complex, it's a little more versatile, a little more like I think an aperitif. And every time you talk about sweet wine, people say, oh, I don't like sweet wine. But do you know how much sugar is in your Cosmopolitan or your margarita? And it's produced by these multinational companies, and the sugar is like corn syrup, and this is family grown. It's probably organic or sustainable, and someone lives nearby and they're not spraying the shit out of their vineyards because their kids are running through them. It's just, it's a no-brainer. And there's acidity. It's like you're in a Cosmopolitan. You have your lemon or your lime as your acidity and your cranberry. And you've got your triple sec, which is like bought in Hungary or some crap or China. And this is like It's unbelievable. So
yeah,
this is just a
Cosmopolitan. People still drink those things?
So much Cosmopolitan.
But whatever.
Margarita.
Like the
I mean,
vodka craze. Were you alive in the 90s? Oh, my God.
Do you remember those charts of like what calories are in the lowest calorie is Diet Coke and Bacardi, but the highest calorie is a margarita because it compensates for the acid in the lime. You have to put so much sugar in there.
Yeah. We should also talk grape varietals. So you're going to see two grape varietals used exclusively, Semillon, Sauvignon Blanc. And we know
Muscadel
what those
also.
Do.
Huh? Muscadel also.
Muscadel also. Sorry about that. But on the ones we're having today, it's only those two.
Okay.
Right. I believe. I looked at the tech sheets last night. I could be wrong. I could distract my
this
baseball.
One we're drinking now is 100% Semillon. So Semillon is a little more broad. It's a little more full-bodied.
Right.
It's, when you drink it dry, it's if someone says they want full-body but they don't like Chardonnay, you can get in white Bordeaux, you get a nice Semillon. And so it's broad on the palate. And you can taste this. You can taste, I think this like, there's a glycerol oiliness on the tongue from this, but it's certainly not heavy, but it's broad. It's broad on the palate.
So in most of the Bordeaux whites you drink in the Graves region, Entremet, what you're drinking is a blend or a single varietal of those two grapes. And Sauvignon Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc has that sort of grassy, tropical fruit notes, kind of lean, a little more acid. Semillon gives a little more oily,
exactly.
A little more weight, a little more heft to it.
You got
That's
it.
Been my take on it.
I think you're exactly right. You can get varieties. I mean, depending on what yeast you use and things like that, you can have a variety. And I used
how
to
how long
think,
on lees? Are you Bétonnage? Are you not?
Yeah,
blah, 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 blah.
And it's like you can have a New Zealand style Sauvignon Blanc. It's all gooseberry and boysenberry. You can have that grassy note you get in Sancerre. You can and there's a wide range within Sauvignon Blanc. And
we didn't even mention Catpiss.
And I
sorry.
Yeah. But I think that's the entry point for getting people to understand that this is the Sauvignon Blanc. People are familiar with the grape because Sancerre has gotten so crazy. But you get, the Sauvignon Blanc comes from Bordeaux. Drink white Bordeaux. It's amazing.
Yeah. And if you don't want to drink white Bordeaux, go up to Loire Valley and drink Sancerre. Sorry. Pascaline. She's listening somewhere. All right. This is delicious.
This is amazing. And
For me, I'm thinking blue cheese. Yeah. Bank shot.
Yep.
I'm thinking most goat cheeses would be great. And then I'm also thinking like fruit-based desserts.
This is also to replace any cocktail that uses the lay, like a white Negroni. I have a white Negroni at the restaurant that I use Sauterne instead of the lay. So you can kind of see the complexity of the lay. I always say it's like barks and roots and crap with liquor. And the complexity is there, but from a different place. Like
God, Lillet, I haven't had Lillet in years.
You have those, it's wine,
yeah.
But it's fortified wine, and then you have all the things soaking in it, and you get all those from just the natural complexity of the yeast and the sugar and the botrytis in here.
And there's that. You got a lot of RS. So I don't know, we're going to guess 130, 140 grams, but there's still this acid backbone that makes this. That it's kind of like people, like Americans, I know for a fact, for sure, we've become more acclimated to acid. As a flavor component, chefs are using it constantly, sneaking it in dishes all the time, whether microplaning orange or adding squeezing lime or lemon or vinegar, because it's kind of a polishing agent. And I remember when
it refreshes.
It kind of right. It acts as kind of like a countervailing force. Like if you bite an apple, like we're in apple season now. So you're in Spirit of the Day, so I'm just buying all these varietals of apples, and you go home, give them a wash, give them a bite, and it's like the perfect eye opener.
But that's like Red Delicious and Golden Delicious don't have any acid. They're not interesting.
Not interesting at all. So the ones that are interesting
McIntosh,
are the ones
where Gala, you go back, you want more. Because that acid, it like cleans your palate.
And even in like pineapple,
back.
We think of pineapple as being sweet, but pineapple grape
so
is super acid. Yep. What makes grapefruit, makes all these things. What makes fruit mostly so wonderful
that's
is
exactly
that countervailing force of sugar and acid playing well together.
And that's so many sweets. You can have a bite of pie or whatever it is or a caramel or something, and you're like, okay, I'm done. This stuff, that acidity, it cleans, and you want to go back for more. Your palate is left wanting more, and I think that's a good wine or a good dish when you want more.
All right, last one here.
All right. So this is the point of bringing this one is from Cérans, which is outside of the Sauternes appellation, but it's often these are the really good values, and I was telling Gabriella that if you see a Cérans or a Loupiac or a Cadillac in a wine store, they're probably going to be pretty good because it's a darling of the wine shop. Because Sauternes and Barossa is going to sell itself, the Clémence, the Ecam, the Riesec, they're going to sell themselves. So if you see a Cérans, a Cadillac, Loupiac, that's somebody's heartthrob wine, a coup de coeur, Daniel Jonas calls it. That is there for a reason. So though I fell in love with this wine at Harlem Eat Up this past summer, and we were right next to Marcus Samuelson's booth, and he had a udon noodle with like a black bean vinaigrette and some cucumber, and it was a spicy Asian dish with shredded chicken. And this wine, I was like, drink this wine with that dish. It's unbelievable with like a spice dish. And Berenice talked, our dinner with Ed Blue Hill, Berenice talked about how the sweet and the acid in this amps up all the flavors in a hot wine. The sugar calms down the spice, but it amps up all those flavors. You always have those gingers and those secondary flavors that you get in Asian food, and that's why it's such a great pairing with this wine. Do you get the floralness, the, like, it's kind of like a third thing outside of Barsac and Sauternes? It's a little more floral, it's a little more gingery, it's a little more just, it's, in a way, it's simple, but it's also intriguing, and you want to go back. It's exotic.
Totally different. Wait, I'm looking at my notes here, and I could be wrong, because I am often wrong, but having my notes here, they're, during fermentation, it's pulled off the lees and must. Do you know that? Sorry.
Yeah, because the lees have that funk, the rot. You have to pull it off. You don't spend so much time on lees.
This is a totally different weight. I mean, I'd say it's, you're right. I mean, the nose doesn't, you're not getting that super honey, super acacia, super,
it's almost like a Sauternes and a wine mixed
together.
Yeah.
So the, and maybe a little more floral, but less on the sweet honey white flour side of it.
Yep.
And then in the mouth too, the weight's totally different. I'm guessing this is maybe under 100 grams of residual sugar. Who knows?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And it probably isn't even on here, but yeah. And it's, there's something like a, I get a, like a white tree bark that, like, that tannin kind of like brings you back, you know, you,
I can't, I, now I'm actually gonna go like drive to a birch tree and lick
an aspen tree or something.
Right. Yeah. Lick an aspen tree. I got two. I can go to New England and go to Colorado. That's great. I love these wine. That's the funny thing about wine too. It's like our reference where we were talking about this last night, we were in blind tasting. It's like, all of us have different equipment. Like, some of our noses, like, you're going to be really strong at some things and blind at others. There's, I can never smell, like, citric notes. I can never get lemon in wine, and other people do.
I don't think you smell those. I don't smell acidic notes.
I can't.
Yeah,
it's or, and some people, or even if some people say, oh, I'm getting, like, microplane lemon. I'm like, I'm not getting anything. Smoke, I mean, if it's oak from smoke, I'm getting it. If it's volcanic, I'm getting it. But I smoke cigars, so I'm, like, less immune. And back to the cat pissy thing. I remember we were doing a tasting once with a bunch of friends of Sauvignon Blanc, and I'm like, I can't stand these. I can't stand these grassy cat piss, grassy. And then, like, the one guy's, where are you getting cat piss? I said, do you have a cat? He says, yeah, I have a cat. He says, that's why you don't smell it. It's like people that have dogs don't know. Like, if you have a dog in the house and it smells like a dog and your whole house smells like a dog, you don't smell dog.
That's true.
Because
that's,
you're used to dog.
Old ladies wear more perfume because their noses are used to it.
I guess. I'll have to ask. But I mean, so it's so funny. And we all have, like, different equipment. I'm like, I get on red wines a lot. I get, like, Forest Floor. I get truffles. I get wit leaves. I get mushrooms. And my son's always, like, because now he hangs out with me, like, all the time. And he's like, let me guess.
Well, I sometimes,
wet leaves, truffles, forests, floor. You say that about everything, right, Dad?
You sometimes, some people hesitate to even say things because once you say it, you either are leaving the other person out, or you're making them question their own sense. And everybody tastes different. And so sometimes,
but my thing is,
you bond over it, but sometimes you separate by it.
Yeah, but we all taste differently. That's my point. Is, like, there's things that, like, I mean, again, like, we were out last night with my son and a friend of mine who's totally normal, and we're all, like, the great thing about, like, 3-4 people around the table is everyone's getting something a little different.
It's just, can we agree on like,
it's oxidative, say, right? It's oxidative. Okay, so we've got that. It hasn't been finer filtered. Okay, we've got that. Look at the color. What are we looking at? Where do we think this is? Because, I mean, we actually got, what do we have, 8 wines? And I think we got 4 of them, right?
Oh, that's good, though.
I know. That's crazy. That was crazy, crazy. My son got a Pinot Noir, which I was, although I was close. I was like, as soon as she poured, I was like, Gamay. She's like, it's not Gamay. I'm like, fuck. And then I'm like, breathe a little bit. And then I'm like, Nerello Mascalese, Ruque, Schiava. I was in that light. I was, like, in the right room, just the wrong variety.
Yeah.
And he got that, and I think I got a Roussan that nobody picked up. It was just like a kind of stab in the dark that it was a white. I mean, who knows? Blind tastings are impossible. But they're fun. Do you like them?
I don't. I'm one of those guys that, like, keep your mouth shut and let people think you're a fool, or open your mouth and prove it
and be a fool.
Yeah. So I
your blind tastings are brutal,
but they're brutal. You gotta.
And imagine, so we were doing this last night with Pascaline and Linda, like, circling our table, and when we got the first one wrong, because I'm telling you, they should have been decanted. So first one, and we were like, thank God they weren't next. We're like, cider. I think it's cider. And then we go from cider to, like, Tinto Sherry. No, it's a Fino. It's a Fino Sherry. And they're like, no, it can't be Sherry. We haven't even tasted it yet. And we taste it. We're like, fuck, this isn't Sherry. It's so, what is this? And then we're like, completely. And we ended up, like, in the Jura, and it was Chenin Blanc from Loire. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's, like,
but
the
that
biggest.
That is one of, like, the biggest that you can have. Sweet, you can have bubbly, and you can have anything in between. You can make
the more I think I know about Shannon, the less I will tell you
I
know about
Pascaline's
Shannon.
It's her baby.
It is. No, but
it
makes sense.
World, it's a universe.
It's the greatest. It's like Riesling in a way. It's the greatest polymorph grape I know. You can have it sparkling. It's astonishing. You could have a dessert wine. It's incredible. And then you have it over schist, over slate, over every soil type. Every vintage is different. It can be rich and round and opulent. It can be super lean and saber like. It's crazy. But we redeemed ourselves with some other ones. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think blind tastings are just, like, kind of torture. And you're right, because you can, Who's ahead?
You do learn.
I remember we were filming with Mike Madrigal years ago. We were at Barbalude. And he had a great program going with the staff at Barbalude where every Thursday he would have a wine salesperson come. So it could be Jenny and Francois.
Oh, that's
it could be
cool.
And he would have the entire staff meet at that big back table at the restaurant.
Right. The baptismal font.
And they would wrap everything in aluminum foil, pour glass. And everyone got it. Busboys, everyone on the floor got a chance to talk. And it was pretty cool.
That's nice because you learn each other and you learn to not be afraid.
Correct.
And that's the
you
worst
to put
thing
your hand
about,
up. Like, and, yeah. I mean, worst comes worst, you're wrong. But let's face it, with blind tastings, we're probably going to be wrong 90% of the time. Yeah. If no one's giving you the – I mean, it might be easier if Dresner comes in. But, I mean, if you're just being like blind tasted, like you're not being told New World – you're not being told anything. Right, so it's like walking in the dark. Yeah. Thanks so much for coming out.
Hey, this was fun. Oh, by the way, we didn't say the name of this one. This is from Serons, but it's Chateau de Seuil, 2010, from Serons.
Spell that.
S-E-U-I-L.
Low temp fermentation, blah, 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 apricot, pineapple, yeah. Yeah, and they said lemon, but I'm not getting lemon.
But you would have this with food. I would want this with food rather than
dessert. Ever since that Lourton baptism at Blue Hill.
Yeah.
She did the job. I mean, she just opened up
really
the idea
really
that
did.
You can do these things. And I think it's because of the acid. I think it's because of sort of the new style, and they've all got this super acid backbone.
Well, and people forget that there's...
I mean, they're not going to eat this with steak.
That pork that we had was sweet. There's sugar in beets. There's sugar in roasted pecans in your salad. There's sugar in a lot of things. People are afraid of sweet, but there's sugar in everything we eat. We have palates that are genetically... We're drawn to sweet things. So don't be afraid of sweet. There's sugar in everything.
All right, stay tuned. We've got a good show next week. I don't know who's here. I never do the shows. You'll find out when you tune in next week. But it's probably about, let me guess, Food and Wine. Something tells me. Actually, I think it's Alice Firing is with me next week. Cool. I know it's Alice, so she's great. So right with the raw thing in our rearview mirror, Alice here to talk about natural wine, and then somebody else here to talk about probably more wine or more food, one or the other. See you next week. Take care, folks, and congratulations, Chicago Cubs. Go Chicago.
Cubs. Thanks, Mike.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.